Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
How does this card keep finding you?
We should have an award for that. The rares that find you the most.
This is like the Snicks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Summerbloom Sachs. Ethan, we made it. It is the end of the school year, and I am here. I survived. Thank you. So, Summerbloom is a throwback card. Also, because Secrets of Strixhaven doesn't have any cool cards to introduce you as.
Taste it, Secrets of Strixhaven. This will not be the last time you get dunked on this episode. I'm so glad that you are on the other side of this very difficult semester. How do you feel?
I feel great. I feel like it was a Herculean effort, and I am very glad that I held the band program together for 4 months near single-handedly, and just very, very proud of myself, proud of the kids. You know, I feel like this is my Academy Award speech, but truly, this is what, like, I've had some rough years teaching, and this semester is up there with, like, my first year teaching and some of the more hard, difficult experiences that I've had as an educator.
I raise my mug to you, and I wish you better and brighter years to come of teaching, and that is the worst that you have to face.
Thank you. I'm sure it won't be easy. Like, we got marching band season coming up after the straight into that after the honeymoon, but it's gotta be easier. We've got a new person hired now, so should be locked and loaded back to three people.
Which brings us to Secrets of Strixhaven, which we will unfortunately still be talking about this week.
Oh, there he is.
So I messaged Ben a few days ago and I was like, look, I'm gonna be just a heads up. Real honest with you, I am on like full blown monkey tilt and just don't know how I'm going to try and turn around to be positive on the show, but I am struggling hard. And I got crickets from Ben. I got no response. No,
that's
I'm
like
sorry,
the
buddy.
Day before graduation. Yeah,
Just going to bring you on my journey with me. So I get nothing, no response from Ben. I'm stewing, by the way, just stewing, not because Ben hasn't responded, but just stewing, you know, wanting to do well. This is also wrapped up in losing, but also frustrations with the format, wanting to have something to talk about on the podcast. And then Ben shares me the show note document. And it's just an absolute delight of show notes. And as I'm reading through the bullet points and thinking about talking with Ben, I'm back. I'm like excited again to talk about magic, even though there will be some fraught things and just chef's kiss, sending out an SOS, a perfect encapsulation of my week with this format, with that message to Ben in particular. I sent out an SOS and he responded in kind with these show notes. So that's where I'm at. But I have a lot to talk about with this set.
I would say I might be more proud of the compliment you gave me about our episode title than making it through the school year. Like, honestly, feels great. Also, I went back to Discord and I responded within 30 minutes of your first message and an hour and a half of your second message. There was no crickets.
Okay. It was not, that's just something for me to work through in therapy then, I guess. Why did I not hear your response?
Were they good responses? No, absolutely not. Definitely not. There was a response given.
So we will get to the tilt of it all, the sloppy play, the bad drafts that I had this week, what reflections I have. We've got a sort of soup du jour of topics to discuss at first, and then we'll dive into some Secrets of Strixhaven specific things as well. But first things first, the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to get back to the show if they so choose. We've got a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page. One is access to our Discord, which is just a great community of like-minded limited individuals. The other thing we're doing now is gameplay review videos for all of our patrons. The Discord is the place to drop those games to be reviewed. And this was our second month doing that and got a lot of submissions and a lot of great conversations after the fact. So those are fun. Gameplay is tough to do on the podcast, but it's nice to have an outlet to do that. And selfishly, it's very fun for me to like be presented with half a dozen puzzles to sort of sort through and try and solve. So that's something that all our patrons get access to. Something that higher tier patrons get access to is our podcast feed, where you get access to this episode a day early, ad-free, and also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to our Patreon page. And we want to welcome our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Charlie, Peter, Ingebjorn, Alex, and Russell. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Truly cannot say thank you enough.
This message is sponsored by Raycon. If you're someone who likes getting outside, whether that's going for walks, running errands, or just getting some fresh air, it's nice to have something that fits effortlessly into your day.
Raycon's essential open earbuds have become my go-to when I'm out and about, especially mowing the lawn. Just pop those babies in, get podcast entertainment for an entire hour while I'm mowing the lawn, or if I go for a jog outside, pop in that earbud. Used to be a year ago, 2 years ago, I was dealing with a cord while I was running or like trying to put my phone in my pocket with the cord and it'd get tangled up and I'd rip my earbud out of my ear. You have none of those problems with the Raycon's essential open earbuds, and I cannot imagine trying to listen to podcasts and doing active things without them.
Raycon's earbuds sit outside your ear canal, so you get a really clear sound, but you can actually hear what's happening around you, too. Do you get a little nice background hum of the lawnmower for your podcast?
Yeah, a little bit.
They're light, and the ear hook part rotates, so they actually stay in.
Raycon has over 3 million customers, and the sound quality is just as good as the way more expensive brands. And if you don't like them, they have a 30-day guarantee.
The essential open earbuds are the perfect addition to your everyday routine. Go to buyraycon.com/lolopen to get 15% off. Thanks, Raycon, for sponsoring. Okay, first up, contender drafts. Hot or not?
I did one of these. Have you done any of them?
Yes, I've done many of them.
You've done many of them. So this is where the salt is flowing from.
No. This was extra seasoning after the salt. Well, I did like 3 of them and then was reading through our Discord and people were like, pretty sure this is just shared draft queues with everybody and shared ladder play with everybody. Like there's nothing contendery about these other than they cost twice as much and the prize payout is twice as much.
Correct. Yeah, so you're just betting $20 at a time instead of betting $10 at a time on Premier drafts, which felt really bad. Like, this could have been cool. Like, if this were its own draft queue and its own player pool, I would absolutely want to spend money on this and try to earn the draft title. I did my one, and I 2-3'd, I think. And then I knew that we're not shared draft queues at that point. Like I had already figured that out from reading the Discord.
Yeah.
But then I read more and I was like, wait, this is the same player pool too?
Yeah.
This seems horrible.
No contendery about it. Other than,
well, you get a title of draft contender.
Which just means I spent more money on this draft and trophied.
So not hot, I think. Could have been very cool.
I agree. Yeah, I'm just like, well, then why not just have like a slider bar of like, I would like to wager 5,000 gems for this draft.
Right. And
please rate my payout appropriately to that bid. But I don't really understand this. Is it a limited run? Like, is it just this weekend? Or is it longer than that? Like, how long is this? Do we get to be contenders for?
I don't know. I can't imagine it as a forever run. But be careful with that sliding scale, or they're going to start building that into the into the upcoming release schedule.
Okay. Well, yeah, Watsi, if you're listening, that's a free idea for you. But I imagine that also gets dangerously close to gambling. I mean, that's why this is just my, like, this is just the gambler in me. That's why I was like, yeah, run it back. Let's do it. keep them coming. We also got huge news about Death to Omen Paths.
I think Watsi heard us complaining on the podcast. That has to be it.
You think that's it? We did this?
I think everyone can give us credit. You're welcome, internet and magic community. We saved it.
Yes. Yeah. So it was no small feat, but we did it. But yes, they announced that the cards in paper will be the same as the cards on Arena, on Magic Online. They are going to retroactively put on the Spider-Man set. So we will no longer have Spider People and Kervec and all that stuff. We're just going to get like Superior Spider-Man and all that good stuff on Arena retroactively, which is great. And we'll just be good for content in general.
Well, that's my stance. I just care that they are the same name for content. I feel like there's a general vibe, like kind of the way you worded that is just kind of the way the community talks about it. And that's the way LSV talks about it as well, that it's going to be way better to be casting Spectacular Spider-Man than whatever the Omen Pass name of that card is. And I don't agree necessarily. I don't want to be slinging Spider-Man cards. I don't want to be slinging Marvel cards. Like I was just sitting at my computer last night. Catherine and I applied for a marriage license online. You could do that before you go to the county clerk's office to speed things up. And on my other document, I was trying to get organized for the summer because we're recording a bunch of episodes early for a paternity leave for you and a marriage / honeymoon leave / start of Marching Band season for me. So we're banking about 4 episodes. So I'm just making sure I have my ducks in a row with all that. And I had our yearly like release schedule on the other thing. And I was looking at it and it was like Star Trek, Hobbit.
No.
I was like, what's that over there? Why does that say Hobbit? I thought this was Magic. And I was like, eh, you nailed it.
There it is.
Me too, girl. Me too.
So we should talk about that, what our schedule is. So my wife has we have like an induction date now. So we know when this baby is coming. So we know when paternity leave is going to be happening. And it overlaps with Ben and his honeymoon. So there's like a couple weeks in there where neither of us would be available and I would like some time off. So we're going to bank a few episodes, which is basically going to overlap, unfortunately, with what will probably be the first good set of the year, which is the Marvel set. This is a Humphrey set. This is the set that's going to be drafted in top 8 of the Pro Tour. So we're going to be here for Crash Course for that and our early impressions from Early Access, or our first impressions from Early Access. And then we're going to be on break. We will come back live for, we will come back for a current week's episode to review the Pro Tour drafts, because we don't want to miss that. And we're excited about the top 8. But everything else in the sort of span of when we would normally be covering Marvel early, and like the play of Marvel and the week-to-week changes of Marvel, we will have some banked episodes. So that's going to be the Paternity Leave Chronicles Part 2. We've got some really cool episodes lined up, some great guests. I'm very excited about that, but that just won't be our normal like week-to-week current fare for that set. And then we will be back for The Hobbit.
Yep.
What else we got? When do I get to talk about my salt?
I think we should check in on Secrets of Strixhaven. I think now is the time. Give me what you got.
Okay, so I will say a number of things because this is a podcast, but I know you have something here about rares, and that is one of my issues. But my journey this week was we left last week thinking, hey, maybe let's talk about doing some low power drafts. Like, what can you do in low power drafts? How to navigate those? So I was on this like time crunch journey of every draft I would enter felt like precious material. And if that draft was a straightforward draft, was not an interesting draft log, then I would be like, all right, let's speed through these games, blah, blah, blah. And then I would play sloppy because I would like want to get the games over quickly so that I could get into a new draft queue to try and get a draft log that was actually interesting for the podcast. So
the games don't get over with quickly in this format.
They do not. And that brings me to, so that's a me in the content space this week problem, but that was what was perpetuating some of my even with my good decks in a straightforward draft where I had good decks, I wasn't playing great. So then I was losing with those decks. And then then in the interesting draft logs, I would get scrappier decks. And I would also be losing with those scrappier decks because those decks are harder to contend with the big bad late game cards. To your point of games do not get over with quickly in this format, that is one of my biggest gripes, not the length of games, but the sameness, and I know I expressed this last week, but I was like, I feel like I need to do a better job. But the sameness of the way games, the inevitability that games feel. There are so many cards. I broke down a list. I just went through all the rares and mythics. There are so many cards in this format that say, I win the game in 7 turns. And you might think you have a fighting chance in those seven turns, you might try and maybe you can eke out. Maybe you have like 5% to win in those seven turns. But like, think about Arc of Hunger, the cycle of paradigm cards, most of the Emeritus cycle that like have demonic tutor or regrowth tacked onto them. Mathemagics does win the game on the spot. Mind into Matter, Moment of Reckoning, I guess, kind of wins on the spot. That's the like combo zombify four or kill four things. Resonating Loot, Splatter Technique, there's Together as One. There's just so many, like, I draw four cards and I get a bonus. And you're like, maybe all four cards are lands that you just drew? I guess I have to play a few more turns. Or Arc of Hunger, you're like, all right, strap in. Or they cast the Red Paradigm card, and you're like, maybe I could get the game over within two turns before they get too much value out of it. All of those games feel the same to me. And all of those cards, while different, feel the same to me in terms of how they play out. And that is one of the most frustrating things about this format to me.
I agree. I put in our notes that you're usually a big fan of rares. And I don't like that the rares in the set lead to you drafting. They incentivize you to do the same things in the draft, which is you basically are incentivized to draft the same style of deck over and over, rather than what you usually say about rares is that rares provide unique gameplay experiences. And they just do not here, because all of the rares that you listed, or all of that type of rare that you listed, either leads to soup or you drafting like Prismari Control or X Control, which your goal is basically to make the game go as long as possible because you assume you have better cards than your opponent.
The reason I am often a big proponent of rares is because they change your pick orders, or they force, like, if I open some great black bomb, then I'm incentivized to take hits and power level. Or if I open a card that asks something of me, like its ceiling is very high, but it asks me to change my pick order in some way. That's interesting. That breathes new life into drafts in week 5 and week 6. But yes, your point about these cards in particular is that the support for those cards is all the same. I am taking the same commons and uncommons to support most of those cards. There's also this feeling of dread. I don't know if you have this as well. Like, I have this feeling of dread before those cards get cast. Like, if my opponent has played a Potioner's Trove, maybe they've gotten back a spell with a Zealous Lorecaster, they're 22, 23 cards deep into their library, I'm just like, which is it? Which one of these am I gonna face in a few turns, you know? And that feeling also is not fun. I don't know. It just all feels very same. Here's another thing that I noticed this week, and this might just be a me thing, but I feel like this is a bug, not a feature of the format, in that it's basically impossible, or you just shouldn't be trying to play around things. Think about the counter magic people could have up. You have like blue and X up in your mana base. It could be Essence Scatter. It could be Disdainful Stroke. It could be Spell Pierce. It could be Daze. So I guess I just don't do anything different. You have a black mana and something else up. It could be Bitter Triumph. It could be Last Gasp. It could be Masterful Flourish. So I guess I just don't play around anything. And like, that's one of my favorite things to do in Magic, is like try and piece together the puzzle of what's in your hand. And I think you get pretty punished for like being like, well, it's one of these three things. I'm going to make a read that it's X. And I think you're basically just supposed to not try and play around stuff in that capacity, or read your opponent for something in that capacity, because there's just too many options.
Yeah, I mean, I try to play around the counter magic some and think about what the most likely thing they have is. And I do try to not cast my bombs into open blue mana if I can help it, but sometimes you can't help it.
Right. At a certain point in the game, you're like, you probably can have two mana up every turn if you want.
Correct. So yeah.
I'm going to get got by this Disdainful Stroke if I'm going to get got by it. Also, there's like your opponent chump attacks with a pest. Maybe they want a life gain trigger and you should block. Maybe they have Essence Knit Scholar post-combat and they want you to block so they get a death trigger. Maybe they just have a combat trick. Like, I feel like I'm sometimes punished for like trying to think about what I should do in those spots when it's just like, nope, it's too many options. Just
block.
Do what you think is best. Yeah. Just block. Or don't block. Whatever. Yeah, just block.
You like thinking deeper about playing around stuff than I do. I'm serious. I am not. When yeah. Hearing you say all that, it makes sense to me, but this format rewards you for wanting the games to go long, which I enjoy doing, and this format also rewards you for generally taking very conservative lines of play towards making the game go long, because if you successfully make the game go long and you've got the cards that win the late game.
So true. I think that you've hit on something here, which is that, like, I like taking aggressive lines that, like,
this format punishes aggressive lines.
It really does. It really yeah. does. But I hate doing the, like, well, I'm probably 80% to win if I do this, but I'm 100% if I just wait.
Yeah.
So, hate it.
It takes me a long time to win games in this format. I just kind of cocoon up and do the thing. I do think this format rewards my default way to play Magic.
Okay.
The other thing I want to talk to you about with rares is I feel like they're more of a player in Limited lately, and definitely in this set, than commons have been in the play booster era. And I'm wondering if, like, we are turning into the dinosaurs without realizing we're turning into the dinosaurs. Like, we started the podcast because we felt like, I feel like people are missing the boat on limited yeah. Magic content. Like, that was our mission statement. Like, we wanted to make a show for us, for people who are current, for people who got it, like that were drafting 200 times or whatever.
You think we're out?
And I don't think we're out. I just am worried that we've fallen into a pattern of, like, this is our crash course format. Like, these are the commons that matter. Oh. These are the uncommons. And we do have to have formulas. I mean, podcasts are formula driven.
And we also just re-racked the crash course like a year ago. We also made shifts in the play booster era of doing top uncommons and a list of commons rather than, like, we shifted the focus to uncommons from commons. I want to give us some credit that we are trying to not be extinct here.
Yes, absolutely. I just am worried that, like, or Traveling Minister, like, the fact that we know that's a good card and see that's a good card. And there are people who are like, nah, it's washed. It's a 1/1, doesn't do enough, whatever.
Like, say his name, Mike Sigrist. He can handle it.
I don't want to do that.
I love Siggy because he can take it. Anyway, go ahead.
For this format, there's so much stuff when the new cards come out for the crash course, etc. I'm only looking at the commons and uncommons because it's usually hard for me to just get our show notes together, like to grade all the cards and to pick out my top commons and pick out my top uncommons. I frequently don't look at the rares at all. Or if we bring 10 rares to Lords Unlimited, I'm just like scrolling quick and like giving the rares no thought. And I just feel like the power level of the rares and what the rares are asking you to do dictates so much in the play booster era.
Okay, so I want to ask you, if we had focused more on rares for the crash course for this set, that you could have seen, like, redundancy in them, or, like, it's hard for me to imagine a world where we look at cards like Wisdom of Ages, Mind into Matter, Mathemagics, these, like, big spells, and think anything other than, like, cool build around, I guess.
Yeah. Those are a D or whatever. Yeah. Like a build around D. I agree. Except the card that I kept coming back to that I actually ran into and thought about a lot this week was Eternal Student. Like, is there any way that we could have or should have known that Eternal Student was basically nothing? That's the 3 and a black 4/2 that dies, and you can pay 1 and a black to get it out of your graveyard. It makes you 1/1 flyers.
So I guess we have to work backwards. Why is Eternal Student nothing in this format?
Because of the rares.
If Eternal Student was a white or red card, if it was in the color pair that cared about leaving the graveyard, I think it would be much better. I think black, like, Eternal Student does not play into either of what Silverquill or Witherbloom are doing.
I agree, but it's also, like, on card evaluation metrics, it's a slam dunk. Both you and I would have had it as like a B+ or something, and one of the best cards in the set.
Correct. I called it Lingering Souls, I believe.
And it is.
It's not that
worries me. I was just thinking about, like, card evaluation and, like, Traveling Minister that falls short on, like, traditional card evaluation metrics, and Eternal Student, like, is juiced on traditional card evaluation metrics, and yet isn't good here. Is there, I just my brain is thinking about how to evolve with the times, because I already know I'm off on the AI train. Like, that's where I get left off, and I'm going to know how to do things in Google Drive and send emails and anything that needs to happen with AI in 10 years. I'm going to be like, students, what do I need to do? Like, this AI thing, I have no idea. Like, that's just going to be me, but I don't want that to be me with Magic the Gathering for this podcast.
I appreciate the endeavor. I think that I'm hoping that something like Eternal Student is more a product of the environment, because another card that falls into that realm is Eager Glyph Mage, the 3 and a white 3/3 that brings a 1/1 flyer. I feel like we also were like, this is gonna be one of the top commons. This card is great. And it just doesn't, it's like a last pick card in a lot of packs. Like,
sure.
And so I just feel like that's more of a product of this format than it is. And perhaps a product of, we probably need to think somewhat about the play booster era favoring, like, now that we're not in one drop the format anymore, you know, I think we may have a bit of a hangover from Lost Caverns of Ixalan and Phyrexia All Be One being these hyper aggressive sets. But those were pre-play boosters, and now play boosters don't have a ton of one drops, and the games do go longer. And so maybe those, you know, mid-range package cards, the 4/2 that dies into 2/1s, they just don't cut it because they fall too much in the middle.
Yeah. I don't know. Just asking the questions.
God, that would be like, could you imagine? I wonder if anyone out there knew that Eternal Student was going to be a dud. Like, did anyone else see that card?
There's no way, right? The card looks so good on paper.
It looks so good, but it is not. Yeah.
Sideboarding. Up next, speaking of Eternal Student, I've been playing a fair amount of Best of Three this week. Every time I get to meaningfully sideboard in Best of Three, I miss it so much. Like, nothing feels better than losing game one, feeling like you got a little unlucky, and then thinking about how your cards match up. Like, I played a white-black mirror where my opponent had, like, I was trying to be very low to the ground to get under big game decks, and my opponent had, like, a mid-range Silver Quill deck, and they stomped me game one. Because they had, like, Eternal Students. They had, you know, the 3/3 that brings along a 1/1 flyer. They had the rare that's the 2/2 that drains, and you can rebuy it by exiling an instant or sorcery from your graveyard. And so I got to side out, like, five cards, like some of my cheaper cards or less impactful cards. I got to bring in my own Eternal Student. I got to bring in, oh, they also had several of the 3/3 flyers that drain two, gain two. And I got to bring in two copies of the 3/4 Griffin that, like, matched up super well against that, but then also exiled all their stuff from the graveyard that was, like, graveyard matters. And I got to sight in another removal spell, out tricks, and I just savaged them in games two and three because my cards lined up better. And you just don't get that often in Magic anymore, and that used to be one of my favorite things to do in Magic.
Yeah, what you're talking about is it's so much less what I think we think of sideboarding, of like, you have Arc of Hunger, so I will bring in my Disenchant. And then if I draw that, great, I'll blow up your Arc of Hunger. You're talking about, like, a structural change to your
deck. Yeah, or just getting your power and toughness to match up better. Like, if your opponent shows you a bunch of 3/1s, you side in your 1/4s or your 2/4s.
Yeah,
or that your kind of sideboarding. Yeah.
It's great. It's great. I know that we've got a Q&A lined up for our paternity leave cycle of episodes. And one of the questions that came in from our Discord was about checking in on our limited resolutions for 2026. And one of mine was to play more Best of Three because of sideboarding. And I would feel like I'm not making as good on that as I should, because sideboarding is the best.
I saw that question. I was thinking, I have no idea what I said. My magic resolutions were.
Gotta go back and listen.
What's your
resolution to attend more in-paper events?
It might have been because I love attending in-paper events, and I am locked for MagicCon Atlanta. I messaged you yesterday. It's November 13th through 15th, 2026. I am going to every MagicCon I can. I do maybe think that was one of the things I said, but if I can go, I'm going while the going is good. And that is the weekend after Marching Band season ends. And I am no longer the middle school band director, so I don't have to host all region band. I went last year with a couple of friends of mine from high school, and I think they are going again. But even if they are not, I am there. I am creating the content.
You messaged me about this and you were like, I don't know what your life is going to be like. And I was like, no chance I can go. Because for some reason, I thought it was in September. Well, I'm just saying, like, November 13th and 15th. What will baby
it'll
girl
be like
will
5 months
it'll
old?
It'll be like 5 months. Oh, yeah, I'd have to check.
The weekend. You got 7 more days to apply to be a content creator.
I should just apply. Because I
should just apply. You know,
I applied for Vegas and then I was like, oops, I can't go. They might be less likely to schedule a live show for us since we canceled for Vegas, but we could still do our draft and greet. All right. Yeah. It's not off the table.
Let's go. You love to hear it.
Okay. What do we do in low power drafts in Secrets of Strixhaven other than cry?
I think you have two options. I think your first option is set up to draft the soup deck and hope to get past late game finisher cards. Like if you don't see them early, like it's way better to pack one, pick one of Math of Magics and build the soup deck after that, or get a pack one, pick three Wisdom of Ages and build the soup deck after that. But if you don't see those cards early and you're seeing the Potioner's Troves and you're seeing the removal, you can set up for it. You're risking a lot by doing that. That's high risk, high reward, I think. I think the more consistent thing to do and what I would recommend is option two, which is draft a focused deck that plays to the board. And those decks can win. Like just curving out with a Witherbloom deck with some removal can get the job done, especially if your opponent's not on, you know, the nuts late game deck or whatever.
And even sometimes you can get under them. I mean, it's just tough. Like a Tome Blast might throw you off balance or whatever. But if they don't have it at the time they need, or if you're creatures line up better. Yeah, the focus deck is where it's at.
I personally, one of the things we've talked about and one of the things you've been a big proponent of is never taking hits in power level. Just like take the card in the upper left, take the best card out of each pack, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think you gain much from doing that in lower powered drafts. So I think if you have a lower powered start, you should be more willing to take slight hits in power to keep lanes open. And I think a great example of this that keeps coming up for me is if I'm forced to start black, I really do actually like to get deeper into black if I can to keep both Silver Quill and Witherbloom as an out, because black doesn't really let you off ramp into the soup deck very naturally. So I do like being able to delay the decision in black in a low power draft. And I also, that's like my least favorite color to start. So things are usually lower powered if I am starting black. And then taking hits in power level to leave both of those colleges as options, I think is something that is quite helpful.
When you say taking hits in power level, like let's say you started off with Mozio, the like two and a black, 2/1 flyer brings a pest, and then you can reanimate stuff based on the amount of life you've gained. So let's say you start with that, but then you haven't seen much, you grab a removal spell or whatever. And then pick five, you see a Sennar. You're still taking Sennar out of that pack, right? You're not like, I'm trying to figure out what is the calibration of hit and power level you're willing to take. Like, I assume you're not taking Wander off in that spot over Sennar just so you can get deeper into black, or are you? Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Think I would. Yeah. So like I had a draft that was almost exactly like that, but 17 lands didn't save my log for some reason. I was on PC. I don't know what was up with it. It was actually Mozio, the 2/1 flyer into,
We're all synced up.
Was that into the Vintage Cube card from the bonus sheet?
Bitter Triumph.
Yeah. Was that into Bitter Triumph into, it wasn't Sennar. I don't remember what it was, but it was a Sennar-esque card versus Wander and Death. And I took the Wander and Death rather than branching out, because you're either then there taking Sennar and abandoning Mozio. And Mozio is a pretty good card. Like you can make it good in white, black, or black, green. And Sennar isn't good enough. Sennar's not going to win you a game. Like for me to move off of black into an I'm planning to draft soup or I'm planning to draft spells, I need to see something that is more likely to say that I'm going to end up in that deck. Otherwise, I just rather started down this black path. I'd rather start getting into a functional black deck.
But isn't Sennar, I mean, it depends what pick this was, I think. Like if it's pick three versus pick five, even so, I think it's just so good. And is perhaps a signal. Right? If people are passing that, maybe Soup's not open, but Prismari ostensibly should be open if you're seeing Prismari or seeing Sennar that late.
Yeah, and maybe that's a bad example. Maybe it's taking Wander and Death over like Killian's Confidence or something like
that.
Yeah. So sure. That I, or like something that is a guild specific payoff that's pretty good. Or maybe you take Wander and Death over Pest Mascot or whatever. Although I would probably take Pest Mascot in that spot because it pairs so well with
Mozio.
Mozio, yeah. But yeah. Just that idea that I think the lower the power level of the drafts, the more you should be willing to stay where you are, I think, and try to build a functional deck where you started. Because so frequently, if I start flailing like that, I just end up in bad soup. And I think Bad Soup is one of the worst places you can end up.
I totally agree. Bad Soup does not taste good. I send it back. Like, you get two Potioner's Troves, a Zealous Lorecaster, but like nothing.
But you just don't even get two Potioner's Troves anymore without picking them aggressively. Do you know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
So I just think this black deck thing, or Quandrix curve out decks, like you can curve out with mid-range creatures, and I think that beats like some percentage of the decks in the format. And are you going to play games if you draft that style of deck where you lose to somebody who has, you know, removal spell, Potioner's Trove, card draw spell, Math and Magics? Absolutely. That deck is always losing that matchup.
I am going to complain one more time about this format. And the thing I'm going to complain about, is that you get punished for building decks, like the way you're supposed to build decks in this format. What I mean by that is I have my Silver Quill deck and I'm packing five removal spells in it.
Yeah.
And I draw three of those removal spells against my soup opponent.
That feels horrible,
Three dead cards. Yeah. And I'm just being punished for doing what I'm supposed to be doing in this format. And it's just like, oh, sorry, you didn't get matched up against Lorehold players back-to-back. You got matched up against soup decks back-to-back.
That is a frustrating thing about the format. You have to play slightly less removal, I think, if you're like Silver Quilling or you're lore holding. Like you have to make sure, if you're wanting to present pressure, that you present pressure. Mm-hmm. Or you have to mulligan that hand. Like, you can't...
How do I know I'm... Best of one, I don't know I should mulligan that hand.
You have to. You can't... I don't think in this format, in any matchup, you can keep a one creature, three removal spell, three land hand.
Wow.
I think if your deck is supposed to present a clock, you have to be sure you're presenting a clock so you don't auto lose matchups like that.
It's just, I'm just getting therapized all over again, just like being told like I'm the problem.
I don't think you're the problem, but I I have done what you've done and been very frustrated and then resolved to, okay, I can't keep hands that don't, if my game plan is to affect the board, I can't keep hands that don't affect the board.
Yeah.
And like those, if you're playing Silver Quill, your game plan is to put pressure on the board and pressure your opponent's life total.
All right.
So we've got a draft log here.
Okay.
Super low powered start to this draft. We are eventually going to get bailed out, but I also want to just pause and think about what are we planning to do if we don't get bailed out? Pack one, pick one here. Tons of options. I think you probably maybe are not going to pick what I picked, but
I was just thinking this is, we always do as our companion for 50 takes on Lords Unlimited, we do like 12 other categories. And one of them is, what's the card you disagree with your co-host about the most? And it might be this card.
So to not bury the lead, that card is Grave Researcher. It's our rare 2 and a black 3/3. Any of your upkeep, surveil one. If there are three more creature cards in your graveyard, it becomes prepared. And it's got reanimate attached to it as a prepared spell. Also, prepared flopped so hard in this format, right? Like, prepared just doesn't matter as the headliner mechanic.
What do you mean by that? I want to push back.
I just, like, I thought prepared was so cool and was gonna be game defining, and I just don't think it is.
I think they kind of nailed it. But you can make an argument for, like, it's cool to get to cast Ancestral Recall and Demonic Tutor in Retail Limited. But I think, like, Studious First Year, for example, I'm looking at in this pack, that's, like, just good enough, right? It's like, I don't know how you tweak it otherwise, but like this one mana 1/1, and when I see it, I have like a bolt the bird. Do I have to bolt the bird? No, I guess you get to play Rampant Growth then.
I guess what I mean is that I wish prepared stuff mattered in how you won games more. Like, it's very rare that prepared is determining the outcomes of games. Like, that's just all the rares that do crazy things. I wish the incremental value you accrued from preparing, I wish it were more of a resources war instead of a, well, who's got the nuclear bomb?
Right. Well, this is, again, the problem. The 2-for-1s don't matter when everyone is just digging towards their 6-for-1.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I mean. Not that prepared wasn't a well-designed or smooth mechanic. It just
overshadowed.
It's bringing a knife to a gunfight.
What's the reanimate tally? The number of these you've drafted, how many reanimates have you cast?
I don't think I've ever cast it.
That's, I, Your Honor, I rest my case.
that the dream is there, my friend. The dream is there.
Okay.
Maybe once. It's not, I mean, not frequent. So other options, there's a grapple with death, one black green, destroy an artifact or creature, you gain a life. There's the aforementioned studio's first year. There's a tome blast. There's a scolding administrator, white black for the 2/2 menace. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets a creature, put a +1 counter on this creature. And when it dies, you get to move the counter somewhere else. So Quillblade Laureate, one and a white, 1/1 double strike, and it's prepared. I mean, I don't love it. If you told me I wasn't allowed to take Grave Researcher because it is Centaur Courser.
What I've been trying to tell you.
It's a hard lesson for me to learn. If you told me that, I think I would take Quillblade Laureate.
I think that's fine. I think I would take Scolding Administrator, but this is a very flat power level. You could hand me any of, I think I wouldn't be happy with the green cards early. Shocking. # Lords of Limited. But Tome Blast, Administrator, or Laureate.
So can I sell you on that, because this is a lower power leveled pack, we'd rather take Laureate because that leaves us open to Silver Quill or Lorehold, rather than taking a Silver Quill card that is maybe only slightly better than Laureate?
I don't think you... Well, it's tough. In my head, there's a gap. Like, Administrator is significantly better than Laureate, but maybe it's not. If that gap is incorrect, you can definitely sell me on Laureate. But I'm not quite on board with the aforementioned, like, don't take Sinar. Like, I still think, and this might be a case of in 2 weeks, I would come back and say, you're right, I shouldn't take Sinar in that spot, but we won't be talking about the set in 2 weeks. But my current stance is still, like, I just want to take the best card out of every pack, no matter what.
Okay, so this next pack doesn't do you any favors. Whether you have Grave Researcher or whether you have Scolding Administrator. Pack 1, pick 2, there's an Evolving Wilds, and I think nothing. There's like
Terramorphic Expanse for the real heads out there. there's Startled Relic Sloth, which I think is the best card in this pack.
And you like that more than Terramorphic Expanse?
I do, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I think Sloth is a very good card.
Like, I think it's a fine card. I think the 4-drop slot gets pretty contested.
I agree.
And cards that don't do anything when they come in that cost 4 are a pretty big liability.
The free exile trigger on this card is real.
Yeah, but if Lorehold's open, like, I don't think you need to second pick a Relic Sloth.
I agree. I don't hate you taking Expanse, but I'm just noting that I would take Relic Sloth. Like,
sure. You've got Administrator Sloth. I've got Researcher Terramorphic Expanse.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to pack 1, pick 3. But there's, again, like, just
nothing
in this pack. There's a Visionary's Dance, which is a 7 mana, make 2/3s. There's Render Speechless, which I am still super high on. Two white black sorcery, put 2+1/+1 counters on up to a creature, and then you reveal a hand and thought sees your opponent. There's a Rebel Rouser, 2 and a red, 1/4. When it enters, you can discard draw, and then exile a card from your graveyard to add a red and deal a damage to your opponent. And then there's Stand Up for Yourself, 2 white instant, destroy target creature with power 3 or greater at the uncommon slot.
I don't like Stand Up for Yourself. I'm just stared at that card too many times, not being able to kill things that are small. I would take Render Speechless in this spot. I think regardless of what route, obviously if I have Scolding Administrator, I feel good about it. But even with your Quillblade Laureate options, like the thing I feel strongly about Render Speechless here is that this is the number one card that helps you combat the soup decks. This is the like best, I think, non-rare to beat the late game decks. And this feels like a draft where that's likely where you're going to end up based on this start. And so I would like taking the Speechless here.
Yeah. And I think you're in a better spot than me. If you've gone Administrator into Relic Sloth into Render Speechless, you've got the start to a nice Silver Quill deck. I am still absolutely flailing here. I have Grave Researcher, Terramorphic Expanse, Rebel Rouser. So yeah. You've done a better job than me, certainly in being focused through the first 3 packs on, like, let me try to do something in the Silver Quill space here. I just think I wanted the packs to tell me to do something, and they weren't up through now. So What's your plan right now if we pause here? Like, what are you hoping to have happen? I guess you're hoping to get into Silver Quill, yeah?
I'm hoping to be Silver Quill, yeah.
Again, I'm just praying for something to happen, but luckily we get bailed out in the next couple picks. So pack one, pick four, there are actually things to do here, which is, I don't know, there's a form of annuity, the white black tapped land, there's an elemental mascot, the Prismari 1/4 flying vigilance, there's Luwin exchange student, 2 black green for the 3/4 with pest friend as the prepared spell. And then there's Matterbending Mage, 2 and a blue, 2/2. When it enters, bounce a creature. Maybe the worst mana war has ever been.
I know. It's crazy. I think I would take the black-white land. Like, Luwin and Matterbending Mage are not cards that I'm crazy about. So, yeah, I think I would just take the black-white land.
That makes sense for you, because you're planning to be Silver Quill with your start. For me, I've got Grave Researcher, Rubble Rouser, and Terramorphic Expanse. So I took Matterbending Mage, hoping that maybe Prismari were going to present itself as a lane. And then Pack 1, Pick 5 got handsomely bailed out with a Pack 1, Pick 5 Wisdom of Ages, which I slammed and then drafted a good late-game control deck. Immediately followed that up with an Impractical Joke and was kind of off to the races.
That's very, very lucky. Yeah.
It was very, very lucky.
But to the point, like, I do that too.
I agree. Like, yeah.
No matter what your first four picks are, you take Wisdom of Ages pick five.
So what cards do you have? You've got...
If I have Scolding Administrator, Sloth...
Startled Relic Sloth, Render Speechless, and...
And Black-White Land.
What would have to be in this pack for you to pick it over Wisdom of Ages? Would you take another Scolding Administrator over Wisdom of Ages?
Yes, I would. Like a clear, I think that's a good Silver Quill card I would take in this spot.
Yeah.
Something that made me think, like, this might be a fluke, but or late game blue is open, but so is Silver Quill, and I'm better set up for that.
Sure.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So I alluded to this with Render Speechless, and I do think that is like the best card, but I have like a short list of things that I think are whatever, the filler plus, the best low powered cards that you have access to combat late game decks. Render Speechless, definitely the best of the bunch. Ascendant Dust Speaker continues to impress. This is
the 3/4 flyer, yeah?
Yeah.
I agree. That card's problematic.
4 and a white, 3/4 flyer, comes in, puts a +1/+1 counter on something, and every combat you exile something from a yard. This disrupts Lorehold decks, depending on what they have. Like, if they've got Spirit Mascot in play, you obviously don't want to exile stuff from their yard, so it grows their mascot. But, you know, if they don't have those things, you can, like, nab a Pursue the Past out of their yard. They can't flash it back. Like, that's really good. But also, if you recognize that you're against Soup, just getting to be like, I will start to grab your best spells out of your graveyard so you can't cast Wisdom of Ages, you can't cast Divergent Equation, your Zealous Lorecaster is worse. That's also a real problem for those decks.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like that Ascendant Dustbeaker is the rooftop percher of the set, but maybe people aren't on to it being the rooftop percher of the set. Like that was the 5-mana 3/3 from Lorwyn Eclipsed. That had Changeling flying. When it entered, exile up to 2 target cards from graveyards. You gain 3 life. It's very similar type cards. Innocuous looking, but if your deck, and if you're the one playing against the 3/4 flyer and your deck cares about the graveyard at all, like you have to get it off the battlefield. Like you have to, the next turn, react to that card.
There's like a whole category of these like clunky 5 drops. I would say Tenured Concoctor is on this list too a little bit. That's the 4 and a green, 4/5 vigilance that gets +2/+0 if you gain life that turn. Sneering Shade Rider a little bit, but that has to be in conjunction with a drain package, like the redundancy of Melancholic Poet and Leech Collector and Sneering Shade Rider as your ways to like, if you've stabilized on board, I still have ways to push through damage are good ways to like, if the soup deck is going like, well, I'm stabilizing my life total on board. If you have a way to then combat that life total in other ways, through not combat, that's a way to combat those decks. And the last card I would say is Root Manipulation. That's the 3 black green. Everything gets +2/+2 and menace. Like, it's not a, like, I just am saying that if your draft is low powered, this steals games.
And I agree. I've lost that several times this week, and it's very frustrating every time.
Yeah. So, like, stealing games, it's sort of what we were talking about last week, a little bit of, like, how do you combat those decks? How do you engage with those decks in ways that, like, keep their game plans off balance or anticipate what they're trying to do? And all of these cards do that in different ways.
The other types of drafts, which I was actually ending up in more than low powered drafts, are drafts with mixed signals. Mm. And I think we said it with the low powered drafts too, but I think your number one goal in this format is to not end up in bad soup. Like, you just cannot win games against anything if you end up in a bad soup deck. You lose to the good soup decks, you lose to the aggro decks that are even mediocre, you lose to the mid-range decks that just play to the board. Like, it is so tough.
And do you feel like there are any other ways to end up in bad soup other than, like, trying to basically gumption your way into it? Be like, I'm taking Potioner's Trove third, and I've got a Zealous Lorecaster, and I've got Quick Study, and I hope something powerful comes along. Like, are there other ways you get into bad soup?
I think you can be in higher powered drafts too and bop around too much or be too greedy with your mana base and have a bad mana base. Like, or just not end up. I've also had soup decks that don't end up, like, that have really powerful cards, but that don't end up with enough interaction early. And then you just can't keep pace with what your opponents are doing. And then you get pushed out that way.
I had a really interesting draft the other day where I think I was, like, basically supposed to draft what Rosemary T will call Prismari Small, but, like, a Prismari tempo deck with, like, multiple Expressive Fire Dancers, multiple Deluge Virtuosos. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm basically drafting a Prowess deck.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also had, like, just enough of the bigger stuff where I was like, I have 2 Sonars, and those come with 5 mana spells attached to them for my Opus cards. And I could then put in this other big thing to go get with those. And then I'm just like, is this soup? Is this aggro? If I draw these cards in the wrong order or in the wrong combination, my deck is going to crumble.
Yeah, to your point, I would not be super excited about putting Sonars in a Prismari Small deck, because if you draw your Prismari Smalls, it's like the 3 removal spell hand or whatever.
I agree. And I felt that. I felt that for sure.
So the thing I've been telling myself all week, if I end up in the low power drafts or the drafts with mixed signals, is just, I know what the barrier for entry into the format is as far as, like, power level. And if I'm meeting that power level bar or that focus level bar, even if I see tempting stuff, I'm not trying to let myself get derailed. So I had a very messy draft, and this was my one contender draft. And I'm just wondering what else I could have or should have done in this draft, because this was a high power draft, and I think I totally messed it up.
Okay, I'm turning off picks. You're going to get my live, unadulterated, unfiltered takes.
Okay. Pack 1, pick 1. It's a good pack, but you are quickly deciding between Resonating Loot as your rare, that's the 2 blue-red mana doubler, versus Antiquities on the Loose, 1 white-white, make 2 red-white spirit creature tokens, 2/2/2s, and then you can flash it back for 4 white-white.
I think Antiquities is better than Resonating Loot.
I agree. Yeah. I took Antiquities, but it pained me because I wanted to draft a sweet Resonating Loot deck.
I hear that. Okay.
Pack 1, pick 2. See the following cards as options. There's a Potioner's Trove. There's a Rubble Rouser, the 1/4 that rummages and then can add mana. There's a Last Gasp, the 1 in a black instant, -3/-3 to a creature. There's an Elite Interceptor, white for the 1/2, enters prepared, and you can Rejoinder for 1 and a white to tap or untap a creature and draw a card. In the uncommons, there's a Thorn Fist Striker, the 2 in a green, 3/3, ward 1. Creatures you control get +1/+0 and trample as long as you've gained life. There's an End of the Hunt, 1 in a black sorcery, target opponent exiles a creature, planeswalker they control with the greatest mana value among creatures and planeswalkers they control. I think those are the good cards to shout.
I think the best card in this pack and the best card that goes with what you have is Elite Interceptor.
I agree. I took it there. Pretty straightforward pick. This next one is less exciting or harder in some ways. So pack one, pick three. There's a blue-red duel. There's a Visionary's Dance, the 7-mana make 2/3/3s. There's Spirit Mascot, red-white for the 2/2. Whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. There's a Tome Blast, 1 and a red, deal 2 with flashback for 4 and a red. And the only other white card in the pack is Ascendant Duskspeaker, the 4 and a white, 3/4 flyer that lets you exile stuff from graveyards.
Yeah, weak packs. I think I would just take Tome Blast here as like, you can play all three of these cards if you end up in Lorehold, and if for some reason you end up in Prismari, which is hard to imagine having past Resonating Loot and Violent Outburst or whatever, that I would just take the Blast here.
Yep, I took Blast, so we've got 3/3 on picks so far.
Ooh.
So where things start to get messy.
Okay.
So pack one, pick four. Oof. There are two great cards in the pack. In Stock Up, 2 and a blue, look at 5, put 2 in your hand, and the rare is still in the pack, Traumatic Critique, blue-red X, deals X damage to any target, draw 2, then discard a card. White cards in the pack are Stone Docent, the 1 and a white, 3/1, and Rehearsed Debater, 2 and a white, 3/3 Vigi with Repartee, give it +1/+1.
Is it crazy to think Stock Up is better than Critique?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. I also think it is worth noting the texture of this pack is Witherbloom. There's a black-green land, a Bogwater Lumeret, a Cost of Brilliance, and an Additive Evolution. I don't think I'd
You can also say that the texture of the pack is Prismari because the two best cards are Prismari.
Sure, and a Heated Argument, which is a fine removal spell. I'm noting that. I'm not taking any of those cards, but I am noting that. I think I would just take Stock Up here.
That's what I did. We're 4/4.
Just the best card. Like, I just want to take the best card.
So I just want to pause here. We take the best card in Stock Up. How willing are you to abandon Antiquities on the Loose?
Willing.
Okay.
But, like, I would have to see, if I saw Wisdom of Ages pick 5 again, like you did.
Sure. Then you're abandoning ship, yeah. All right, moving on to pack 1, pick 5. I think this is a very interesting pick here. So we're 4/4. We've got Interceptor, Tome Blast, Antiquities, and Stock Up. There's Visionary's Dance, 7-mana make 2/3/3s. Rubble Rouser. There's Eager Glyph Mage, 3 and a white for a 3/3. When it enters, make a 1/1 black and white Inkling token with flying. And Killian's Confidence, white black, give a creature +1/+1 and draw a card, and then you can rebuy it whenever one of your creatures does combat damage. There's also Wander Off, 3 and a black instant, exile a creature.
I was gonna say you almost didn't read off the card that I want to take out of this pack, which is Wander Off.
Okay.
Because so the reason is that I think not that it's the best card in the pack, but it is among the best cards in the pack. Like maybe Visionary's Dance or Rubble Rouser are better, air quotes, but they're all similar-ish power in my mind. I'm sort of off Killian's Confidence. Like, I think I'll play it if I have to, but Cost of Brilliance does it better, like 9 out of 10 times, maybe 10 out of 10 times. So I don't think Killian's Confidence is that good. And I think Wander Off keeps the best card you have is Antiquities on the Loose. Wander Off plays into that. I don't know. I would be nervous about taking something like Visionary's Dance or Rubble Rouser here and pushing into Prismari without like big cards for it.
That's my question. So I still like my pick here, and I kind of want to defend my pick, which is I settled on Eager Glyph Mage. So I know I like this card more than you. I was scared. Like, I think if you were brave, you could take Visionary's Dance and abandon ship on Antiquities. This feels like slightly too early to do that to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some other Visionary's Dances that might wheel for Prismari as well if Prismari is truly open.
Well, and one of the reasons the Visionary's Dance is so good is if you have like a Wisdom of Ages, if you have a big card to dig towards, like
correct.
That's
and
where
we
the
don't.
Power of this card comes, and you don't have that.
Correct. So I do think it rapidly comes down to then Glyph Mage versus Wander Off, and this is the kind of thing where I like advocating for taking a slight hit in power level. Like, I don't think Wander Off is going to make or break the bank. Glyph Mage is going to make your white deck, and it's going to let you decide between Lorehold and Silver Quill still.
Yeah, this is just where we're different.
We just have a philosophical difference.
Like, I just really don't want to play this card in any deck ever.
Oh.
And that's where we're different.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I took the Glyph Mage. You're taking a Wander Off.
Okay.
This next pack is no good. Like,
not good, but not good for anybody.
not good for anybody. Yeah, this pack is a whiff. So there's a couple Simic cards here in Terra Fractal and Fractal Mascot. There's Brush Off as, I think, far and away the best card in the pack, which is 2 blue-blue instant counter target spell, and it costs 1 and a blue if you target an instant or sorcery spell.
Yeah, I think you take Brush Off and note that maybe Quandrix is where you're supposed to end up.
Yeah, took the Brush Off. Moving on to pack one, pick 7. This is another interesting pick, I think. So there's Fields of Strife, which is red, white, tap land. There's Expressive Fire Dancer, 1 and a red, 2/2. And it gets +1/+1 whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, or if you Magnum Opus, it gets double strike also. And then there's an Archaic's Agony chill in here as well. That's not really in consideration. That's the Deal X Converge card. And then there's some Silver Cool cards too, an Imperious Ink Mage and Cost of Brilliance.
Yeah, I mean, with my route, I would take Cost of Brilliance. With your route, I guess you take the land.
I did take the land, but I think that's a mistake. And I think this is the pivotal thing where I ended up in a messy draft from here on out rather than streamlined. I've been like dancing around Prismari, but like I haven't seen good Prismari cards other than that one pack.
You've passed some good Prismari cards. You passed Loot and you passed Traumatic Critique.
Correct. So I'm like somebody to my left has moved into Prismari at this point. Yeah. So like if I haven't gotten slapped over the head with Prismari at this point, like it feels like a tough sell to move into Prismari.
I agree.
And my thought in taking the land, which I think was incorrect, was, well, I can draft some LSV loose Jeskai. But like Antiquities on the Loose is at its best in a focused deck. And I think I'm supposed to take Expressive Fire Dancer here, lock in a 2-drop, and commit to being Lorehold at this point. Like I have the start to a good functional Lorehold deck, and I'm meeting the power level bar for a competitive Lorehold deck in the format.
Except the except is that the note we took in pack 6, which is that Quandrix might be where you're supposed to be, kind of bears out on the wheel. Like it's hard to know what else would have happened in packs 2 and pack 3 if you do take this route, but like pack 1 pick 8, you're seeing blue green land, Fractal Mascot, and a Thornfist Striker, which I think is the best card in this pack, and then like Infirmary Healer, Wheels, along with Embrace the Paradox, but I would take Healer. Like, I think the wheel tells you to be Quandrix.
But you can't abandon Shift for Quandrix. No way.
Yes, you can.
No.
Yes.
I refuse.
I don't know. I think that's like especially I've been complaining about this format. That's like the best part of this format is seeing things like that. Whether or not you're supposed to, maybe I'm reading the tea leaves too hard. But like you don't see a single white card past Antiquities on Loose is a great card, but you have to surround it with other playable cards in that color, which you do not see.
Well, but so if we go back to the land pick, I wanna talk through the ripple effects from that. So okay. If we take Fire Dancer, pick 8, you get to take a Lorehold Charm. Then you get next to nothing on the wheel, which is fine.
Actual nothing.
Actual nothing. Like you truly get actual nothing.
So then your deck is 5 cards.
You've
got Elite Interceptor, Antiquities, Eager Glyph Mage, Tome Blast, and Lorehold Charm.
But it's a good 5 cards. Or 6 cards or whatever. Yeah. It's six cards. And it's a good 6.
It's 5 cards on a land. Yes. Okay.
No, because you don't take the land. You take Expressive Fire Dancer.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think there's serious ripple effects. And because I didn't take the Fire Dancer, I then take Quick Study, thinking I can be loose Jeskai, and I'm like base blue-white at the end of pack 1, which is a terrible place to be. And I never really managed to get off of base blue-white. So pack 2, pick 1, like if I'd set myself up to be Lorehold, pack 2, pick 1, I could take Tome Blast or Primary Research and just like stay on a responsible Lorehold path. Mm-hmm. But instead, I take a Snarl Song and like I just end up in this base blue-white Converge deck that is very weird and has a lot of powerful cards, but doesn't have a lot of removal. And just like it, isn't a very functional deck. It's like half of white aggressive cards and half of blue spells late game cards.
Yeah, that tracks. I mean, this is just, I'm like, the packs are just kind of weak for you.
Regardless. But there's ways, but that's the thing. Like, that's what we want to look at hard logs, right? Like, what do you do in these spots? And I do think it is also reasonable to have, or certainly would have ended up better than what I did, to have abandoned ship completely for Quandrix. I don't like, if you've got a card as good as Antiquities on the Loose, I don't like scrapping everything for the promise of what is to come in Quandrix. I think there's a way to get out of pack one in Lorehold and draft a Lorehold deck. But I think what I did was the worst of all of the options.
Okay, yeah, that's
which fair. Was, I basically, when I took that land and took Quick Study, was signing up to play. My white cards were all aggressive cards and my blue cards were all control cards. And I was planning to mash them together at the end of pack one. And I followed that plan and it was a terrible plan.
Learn from our mistakes, people.
Yeah. Next one is a quicker log here, but I think, again, a mixed signal type log, but I think a little clearer of an answer this time. So pack one, pick one. I think Elite Interceptor is the best card in the pack. This is going to be more awkward if you do not, but I'm just curious as to your opinion. So Elite Interceptor, the white 1/2 enters prepared. You can rejoinder. The uncommons, there's a plethora of uncommons. There's an Essence Knit Scholar. There is a Primary Research and your rare Suspend Aggression. Oh, this is the pack one, pick one I screenshotted you. Yeah. So you don't take the same thing as me.
No, I take Essence Knit Scholar here. But I think there's some people out there who seem to love Suspend Aggression. I am kind of medium on that card. Yes, I know it's Repulse. It's Bounce a Thing, Draw a Card. It's Airbending Lesson. But I don't know. It's played out clunkier than that for me and my opponents.
Yeah, that card's just fine, I think.
Yeah, I think Essence Knit Scholar is the best card here. But I don't have no problems with you taking Elite Interceptor.
Yeah, I think Essence Knit Scholar is more powerful. It's also extremely narrow, and I don't want to commit to drafting Witherbloom from the start, or I don't want to push down that lane, I guess.
But this just feels like we're seeing a sort of functional difference in how we're approaching the drafts, and I don't have a value. I'm not trying to put a value on who's better, who's more right or whatever, but I seem to be more pushing down the what is the most powerful thing regardless, and I'll take that. And you seem to be incorporating some considerations for flexibility.
Correct, yeah. So took a lead interceptor here. The draft goes pretty straightforward if you take a lead interceptor. Pack one, pick two, you take another Elite Interceptor over cards like Summon Dromedary, Wilt in the Heat. Pick three.
But that is what I would take too.
Correct.
To be clear, I would, even if I have Scholar, I would take Elite Interceptor second.
Yeah, because there's nothing here for.
Correct. It's just the best card.
Pack one, pick three. Wow. I assume you also take another Elite Interceptor here, which I do as well.
Yes, that's awesome.
So I have three Elite Interceptors. You've got the 3/1 plus the two Elite Interceptors. Pack one, pick four. The packs cool off quite a bit. Best card in the pack might be a Johnny's Response. No, the best card in the pack is Paradox Surveyor, which is green, green, blue, blue, 3/3 reach. I'm curious, do you take Paradox Surveyor here with your method?
No, I don't think Paradox Surveyor is that good.
But it's the best card in the pack.
It is the best card in the pack, but I guess I'm wondering, are there any non-rare Quandrix cards I would take? I don't think so. Maybe this is a reason to do it. I like a Johnny's Response plays really well with Rejoinder. So
yeah.
I like taking Response here.
So I took Response to go along with the Elite Interceptors. I was just curious if you would take Paradox Surveyor. And then pack one, pick five. How does this
card keep finding you?
We should have an award for that. The rares that find you the most.
This is like the sixth draft I've seen you get Wisdom of Ages pick five.
Yeah. I mean, I love a Wisdom of Ages. What can I say? It is a narrower card, and it does. It is one of the few cards that require you to actually build around it in a functional way.
I would not take it here, for what it's worth.
That's what I wanted to know. Like,
yeah,
I also really wanted to take it, and I did not. There's good options in white in Molten Note and a Johnny's Response. But, like, what is there a card, once you've started with my start, triple Elite Interceptor plus a Johnny's Response, is there a card in the format, like, that would make you switch? Mathemagic's probably doesn't, right?
Not one of those cards, I don't think, but something like the Blue Emeritus. I mean, that's ever making it to you pick five, but like, there are cards that you're talking about, cards that are not in Lorehold or Silverquill that would make you abandon a four white common start. Like, yes, there are cards in the format, but Wisdom of Ages, I would need the card to ask nothing of me.
Right.
That's why like the Emeritus cards feel like came the to right mind, answer. Because yeah. It's like, okay, Wisdom of Ages does ask something of you. It's not like I'm just guaranteed to have this draft go well if I take Wisdom of Ages.
Is it even a consideration for you? Because I thought long and hard about it.
It's not. I mean, if there were no white cards in the pack, sure. And even if Molten Note is not in the pack.
You're taking a Johnny's response over Wisdom of Ages?
No, I was saying that would make me think long and hard. Molten Note feels clear enough.
Yeah.
And in the context of there's Molten Note and there's Response and Spirit Mascot, so I still feel good about white being open. Like, if I saw Wisdom of Ages and I was getting nervous that white was getting cut somehow, that would make me feel more inclined, if that makes sense.
Sure. But I think it's interesting to note in both this and the other log. The other log, we're slamming pack one, pick five, Wisdom of Ages, because we don't have as cohesive of a start. But because we do here, we're much less willing to slam a pack one, pick five, Wisdom of Ages. I mean, I was still seriously considering it because I have a problem and I love that card so much. But I do think it's right to not here in this instance. Yeah. But I was then once I saw these two logs, I was like, well, what if this draft had started slightly messier? Like, what if you had taken your green-black card into an elite interceptor into a red card? Like, then you probably are. Do you know what I mean? Like, or with your start. It's more of a question for you with the green-black card and the two elite interceptors.
I don't think
nah.
so. Nah. Just because there's no overlap. You know what I mean? Like, I would just have to be scrapping... it's what I said before. I'd have to be scrapping all four picks, and I'm not guaranteed that Wisdom of Ages is going to work, even if I do take it.
Sure.
But like, yeah, I mean, if I take Burst Lightning into Paradox Surveyor, I'm definitely taking Wisdom of Ages.
Like if your picks are Essence Knit Scholar into, what did you say? Into what?
I said into Interceptor, but then you take Burst Lightning third. Oh. Sure. Paradox Surveyor fourth, then you're definitely taking Wisdom of Ages fifth.
Right, because you're way soupier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think there is something. That's the other thing I was trying to illustrate with this is like, I do think there's something to trying to be focused early on in the drafts. If it's not exceptionally obvious that you're supposed to not be focused, I think there is something to be gained in this draft format by trying to be focused.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I think this start more clearly illustrates it because we're not talking about Eager Glyph Mage. Like when I see triple Elite Interceptor and a Johnny's response, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get getting deeper into white with these cards.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. Laid it all out on the field.
Yes. I sent out an SOS and you answered. And hopefully hopefully this helps some other folks out there as well.
Yeah, I think just good, interesting conversations to have about a format that ultimately, like, I kind of stand by what I said week one. This format is not particularly deep. Like, it is late game decks versus the aggro decks.
Yep.
And pretty repetitive of an experience on your 50th draft. And I think no shade to anyone who likes the format. Like, if you love playing this style of gameplay, this format lets you play that style of gameplay over and over and over. But I love that style of gameplay. But one of the things I like about it is like being counterculture or like hipstery with it. And it is significantly less fun when it is the optimal thing to do. Anyway, that's all I've got. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can check out all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively. Are we going to get any June streams, Ben?
I was talking to Catherine about this. I just don't feel... I'm sure there will be random June streams, but I kind of feel like streaming died a bit for me this semester. I just haven't been live in like 4 months or something.
Bring it back. Let him know. Bring it back. Bring it back. We've also got our merch courtesy of TeePublic. We've got our Patreon page. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.